Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Nunes is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today in person for the first time ever is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. I hope you can hear us okay.
For once.
Over the ache and sorrow that is emanating from your voices after today's game.
Yeah, Dan watched at work. I watched on a plane. The sorrow was equal. I felt like, as I mentioned on Twitter, someone just shouting and screaming into space by themselves.
It's really amazing how this team seems to win and lose in the exact same way every time since basically like the UNC Notre Dame losses.
They're consistent.
They're like consistently frustrating. They can't put a game away if they win. They don't just fall apart if they lose, but they can't make the plays that they need to win the game. And this was just the next logical evolution of that. And it seems like they're just trying to play themselves to like the exact bubble. And instead of like clinching it tonight, like they're like, what can we do to make sure this is as stressful as humanly possible on Sunday? Both in wins and losses. Like there was a while where it seemed like we were nowhere near the tournament and we got ourselves there. And now it's just like, let's find the most stressful possible resume heading for our fans to deal with heading into Sunday. And I think we got there. I think this is a really just unique set of circumstances that get us to not having any idea if we're making the tournament or not. Like, a bunch of people have us in, some have us out. I don't feel great about it at all.
Yeah, I think this is like one of those like pick your own ending books almost, or at least one of those books where like go to chapter 5 to find out what happens and pick this door. Like, we're gonna, the end of the book's gonna be the same probably, but we're finding the like most roundabout, ridiculous way to circumvent logic to get to an NCAA tournament bid. Obviously, that includes an 8-5 non-conference record with miserable, miserable losses. One inexplicable in-conference loss to Boston College, and then a bunch of really nice wins. I don't think anyone, if you look at just on paper, would think Syracuse would be able to beat Louisville in either building, and yet we almost did in Cary Dome. The one really damning thing I found out at stake is I don't think this loss to Miami really negates the win over Miami. It does continue to add fuel to the Syracuse can't do anything outside the Cary Dome fire, which is turning into probably the biggest selling point against us.
Yeah.
At this point, I mean, obviously, and this isn't like to tie in other years, but you know, Syracuse still yet to win an ACC tournament game. They haven't won against a legit opponent away from the Cary Dome since the Elite Eight last year. Like, there's definite things that you can hold against this team if you so chose to. As we've said before, the bubble isn't weak necessarily, but it is weird. And it's really, I mean, Syracuse has played themselves into a situation where, you know, if some surprise runs happen, if some upsets happen, you know, a team that seems like well out of it, like Georgia, or a team that seems like they're, you know, kind of on the cusp, but below us, like Illinois, makes a run. Like, those are the types of things that we need to really probably be more concerned about this year than any other in recent memory because of how, I think, tenuous our situation is and how much the committee is probably looking for any reason to not include us in the field.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, the obvious comparison is the last year, and while we seem to be in a very similar position as last year, and obviously we got the 10 seed, which worked out well, last year we had a pretty, like, standard bubble. I mean, it was still, like, kind of a feast or famine, but, you know, we had some nice out-of-conference wins. We had a win at Duke, which was huge. We had some bad losses scattered throughout. But it was like at a low RPI, which to this point is the lowest ever. Obviously, it sounds like we'll beat that if we make it this year. But it was like a pretty, you know, it was a resume that looks like a bunch of bubble resumes every year. This year's team is so much weirder. You have 3 top 10 wins, but they're all in the dome. You have, what, 2-11 record away from the dome. You have no good out-of-conference wins to speak of.
4 sub-100 losses.
4 sub-100 losses. But then a 10-8 record in the ACC, the best conference, which might get 11 teams in. I think Wake Forest just did a thing. It must have been a halftime buzzer beater based on time, right?
Probably.
Apparently they just had a buzzer beater, but I assume it was halftime.
Against Tech, yeah.
Yeah. No, Virginia Tech, by the way. That would help. So, yeah, it's just like everything is at, like, you have some things that make it look like a slam-dunk tournament team if you just didn't have, like, the BC loss or the Georgetown loss or the St. John's loss, but then the bad, like the negatives are so heavy,
glaring
in like the opposite direction.
More than any other team, like up for consideration.
Yeah, and then the RPI is bad. Now the question is, how much are they going to use the RPI this year? Because there's been talk of them weighing in things like what, Jerry Palm's rankings and some other stuff.
Ken Palm. Ken Palm and Sagarin specifically said they didn't want theirs used exclusively. Because they felt that theirs were more predictive measures than measures of what you've done.
And which is fair.
Yeah, and I think that the quote from Ken Pomeroy was, the public can't handle a 16-16 team with the number one or top 10 ranking in my ratings getting in over a team that wins 27 games.
Like a St. Mary's last year.
Or like or even like in a major conference, like a team that wins 27 games, like they can't rectify that, and that would probably ruin the tournament. So I think he even recognizes like the limitations of his own metric. I do agree that RPI is going to be less of a factor this year.
Which is good for SU, because their RPI is bad. It's like bad. 80. And the RPI isn't a great measure in terms of actual math.
But what I have seen a lot of people citing this year, and I don't know if this is indicative of anything, is the non-conference strength of schedule, which looked good when we scheduled it.
Even Doug Gottlieb's like, when you have a schedule of, I saw this today on Twitter, like if you have a schedule of Georgetown, UConn, Wisconsin, South Carolina, who else did we have?
St. John's,
Monmouth. Like, that looked like a much better schedule than it ended up being. So that wasn't really our fault. Like, we thought it was a major schedule, and, like, South Carolina ended up being good. Wisconsin ended up being pretty good. But, like, UConn, Georgetown both fell apart. Sup, guys? And then, like, everyone else was pretty much garbage. And we didn't have any of those, like, pesky mid-majors, really. I guess Monmouth is decent, but, like, not going to win us that many points at this point.
Right.
Thanks,
Monmouth.
Yeah, great job, guys.
For messing up the...
So it's just like, you really have to pick at, like, the thing that you want to sell your argument, because it's not, like, a great culmination of things. It's like, you're either focusing hard on the things that make SU look good, or hard on the things that make SU look bad, because there's really no middle. Like, either, whatever you choose either makes it look like Syracuse is a really good bet, or an awful bet.
Yeah, I saw, and I was actually really surprised by this. I mean, Eamon Brennan's not someone who's really bearish on Syracuse, but he's definitely not bullish either. I think he's actually one of the more fair folks in terms of, and that's why it's good he runs Bubble Watch or ESPN. I think he's just pretty fair in general. And he said that SU was in after the Georgia Tech win. Now, we've been in this situation before, if folks recall, for the longer tenured SU fans among us. 2007, Joe Lenardi had us in as a 10 seed. We did not make the field. I think Lenardi is probably less credible than Brennan, but that's just me. If Brennan thinks we're in, I would think we're in. I still think we're, and I know Chris DeBerdian thinks that we are in the play-in game. I would probably trend more towards that.
I think Bracket Matrix has us as like the third. I think we're one of the play-in 11s.
Yeah.
Which, like, I don't really want to do, but it's better than not being in, I guess.
I just don't want to face Vanderbilt.
I don't want to face Vanderbilt. We're just...
I want to see, like, Kansas State.
I'll play anyone if we play the Dome. Oh, yeah. If they want to move that to the Dome, I'm down, like, throw us whomever.
No, I just want to see, like, Kansas State, like, play the... Like, if I want to see Kansas State play their way into that first four matchup, because then I want to smoke them. Vanderbilt, on the other hand, I want no part of.
It's tough. Like, I just don't know what team we're going to get. Like, if the Dome is such a big factor, like, I don't know that it matters that much. Are we really going to find, are we going to make Dayton feel like home? Like, no, I don't know. It's,
we're not.
No. So I would much rather get into the field of 64, because I feel like losing on Tuesday or Wednesday makes it feel like you weren't even in the tournament. I mean, I don't know. Right. Yeah, we haven't been there, but would Tide probably make it feel like you weren't in the tournament at all?
That's what the players said. I know in the first one, whoever it was from Clemson back like 5 years ago said,
right, like, it's like in the tournament. You're out before people have even finished filling out the brackets.
Right.
Which
is fine. I mean, if we end up in the first four, we deserve to be in the first four.
Yeah, you can't really argue with it.
Yeah, like this is not one of those years like 2007. 2007 is a very different kind of animal than this year, than last year. Like, if we don't make it this year, there isn't really, like we said before, there's a compelling argument for why and why not.
Yeah.
And anyone sitting here thinking that, like, SU's a lock, even the experts thinking SU's a lock, like, Dan and I aren't homers to the extent that we're blind about this team, but we obviously have an invested interest in seeing them succeed.
Yes.
And we aren't wishing ill upon them. We're being realistic here that... But this is going to be an absolute crapshoot. And again, if ridiculous things start happening during the rest of, you know, championship week into championship weekend through Sunday, Like, who knows? Our fate's definitely in other people's hands at this point. Last year, fates cooperated. This year, who knows?
Yeah. Well, talking about fates, we had Clemson lose earlier today, which was good. We had
Clemson would make it.
Probably not, but if they had made a deep run, you know, they could have been done something. We have Vatek and Wake in a bloodbath. Love Vatek to win there. Rutgers is a tie with Ohio State. I don't think Ohio State's making it, but still fun.
Especially not now.
And then this has nothing to do with the tournament, but St. John's is up on Georgetown. So shout out to the Johnnies.
Actually, I don't know. I mean, either way, we lose.
Oh, it doesn't do anything for us.
Well, St. John's, like...
It's just funny.
Because I wouldn't mind St. John's getting to the Big East Championship game than losing.
No, that'd be all right.
They don't steal a bid. They also make our loss look better, sort of.
Yeah, because they have to win. I mean, they would have to win. They're under 500. So, yeah, that's where we're at right now. And I think we have Cal tonight, who is floating around.
They could get right back in this.
They could get right back in it. They have Oregon State, so...
they should win.
Yeah, they should, but Oregon State has some Syracuse connections, so that would be nice if they do us a favor.
I wouldn't mind. If we're going to get to the playing game, we're going to lose. I wouldn't mind seeing Cal, just like for the jokes.
Oh, God.
I'll just take a couple days of jokes.
I don't even know how I feel about that.
I'll take a couple days of jokes, and then we go away.
All right, bye, guys. Lacrosse season now.
That's
Lacrosse season's right back in this.
Right. So I'm looking over the box score here, Dan, and I don't want to pat myself on the back too much, but I did say in the preview article, watch out for Kamari Murphy. He's going to be the X factor whether or not this game goes in Miami's favor.
Hometown hero.
Yeah, he was the X factor.
He was by far the best player on the floor today.
Yeah.
I guess Andrew White might have been, but they kind of figured out White in the second half a bit.
Well, Murphy was a central part. Murphy was the game plan for them, and you knew it from the get-go that, they were going to feed him and see if SU could stop him on the interior. Syracuse really didn't show any ability to do so. If you remember the first Miami game, that was when we first trotted out the, standard lineup.
That was right after the Boston College loss, which was what is this team?
Yeah, this team probably hot garbage. Ends up they aren't, but...
No.
They could be still. Or maybe...
What are they? I still don't know who they are.
Maybe cold garbage. But yeah, I think the thing this time is they knew that they'd be able to abuse Syracuse inside. They knew that if they could force us to put another body on Murphy, that would mean more floor time for Roberson, which means that you now operate with four guys on the offensive end. It was a smart move on their part because they made us play their style of basketball. We like to play with a little more pace this year, as everyone has probably figured out by this point. Miami does not. They are one of the slower teams around. Not as slow as Virginia necessarily, but Miami definitely did not play with any sort of pace this year. It did like to turn games into slogs. That is kind of how we ended up with this result. Again, Murphy was the guy. And then, Vasiljevic again did exactly what he did last time, just to a little bit lesser extent. We left him open. He hit shots. I think the two of them were the guiding forces in this offense. And the fact that, better players like Reed, Newton, some others, didn't really have to get involved, kind of a testament to how well shots were falling for Miami. I know, early in the game, they were hitting it like a 65% clip.
Yeah, Reed had a couple big ones early.
Yeah. That faded all the way down to about 43% later in the game. That was where they kind of finished off at. They only took 51 shots on the game. Syracuse only took 44 shots. Again, goes to show just how much Miami was able to grind down this this tempo and play their sort of ball game. And that to me, even more than whether they're at the Dome or not, dictates how well Syracuse is going to do in any future game, whether it's the NIT or hopefully the NCAA tournament, is that can Syracuse maintain its own tempo and play its game? That's how they push teams. That's how they get into kind of manic. We almost tipped it a little bit in the last couple of minutes where after Gillen hit that three, you thought we were going to end up in manic comeback mode, which usually gets teams rattled. I felt like, Dan, you could tell me I'm wrong, I just felt like the press wasn't necessarily pressing at the end.
It didn't get them too rattled. I think it did an okay job in a couple possessions of not letting Miami get maybe a great shot, but then they ended up with a layup late that kind of extended things out and pushed us to the situation where we had Gillen taking that off-balance three at the end. Yeah, I mean, the Syracuse press is never quite like the beautiful work of art that you see with like Louisville or like VCU of yesteryear. But, you know, it can be effective. And Miami, you know, it might have bothered Miami a little bit, but it didn't really do enough damage to
change the game at the end. They handled it far more, I think, well than like Virginia does.
Yeah.
Virginia, and I think, you know, we kind of wrote the script for what everyone does to Virginia now.
They just don't have ball handlers.
Yeah.
Miami is better ball handlers, I think, overall.
Well, and yeah, Virginia plays. Virginia, what we've done to Virginia is we've exposed a tightrope that they walk of, like, because they have so few opportunities to shoot, if they start missing shots, they're done. Because they take less shots than everybody else, they have less possessions than everybody else, they have less points per possession than everybody else. They have more points per possession than most because they're efficient with the ball, but they maximize their opportunities. So if you force them to take non-efficient shots, then their opportunities are no longer maximized, and then suddenly their biggest strength is tossed out the window.
Yeah, and if you hit a couple shots in a row on them, like if you just get their defense on its heels a little bit, then they're kind of in trouble. They actually remind me of the 2014 SU team, like the NS team, where super efficient, play as slow as humanly possible, very one point guard driven, but after him, like, there's not a lot of options in terms of ball handling.
Right.
So that's why, like, if you press this Virginia team and if you make Parentis make mistakes, like, they don't have a bailout guy. They are just kind of sunk.
Yeah, and I think that was kind of the difference between this year's Virginia and last year's Virginia. Last year, Virginia had, you know, 2, 3, 4 guys who could really make a difference. Mm-hmm. This year, you know, you're leaning on Parentis, but there are other options coming up. But still, I think obviously, you know, you've got Malcolm Brogdon, some others, like, you're definitely going to suffer. Dan, I guess before we hit halftime, it's going to be a little bit of an abbreviated show today, just because it's later. Obviously, you know, I have other things to do, and there's
still. Later for you, this is actually earlier than we usually record.
This is earlier than we usually record. Yeah, we have a we do have a full night and a full weekend of ACC tournament action. Looking at the bracket for the ACC right now, doesn't seem like anything is surprising as we speak. Dan, who do you have winning this thing now that Syracuse is not an option?
I don't know. It's the ACC is very weird this year in terms of, like, I just don't think there's that one team that stands out. I think UNC is probably the deepest team. They won, you know, they came out with the one seed in the league. I don't know, in years like this, I always kind of default to Louisville. I think they're just so well coached, and they play that disruptive style, and they play well in tournament play. Like, how many times have they won the Big East the last couple of years? Like, 2 or 3.
They played like trash against North Carolina. They have to beat to win.
Well, assuming North Carolina doesn't get picked off by, like, Miami beat UNC by 15 this year, so... That's probably not the matchup. They probably much rather play us.
Right.
And I wish we were there to lose to them. so yeah, I'll go to Louisville, but I mean, I could see like the top 5 or 6 in this league winning it, honestly.
Yeah, I'm kind of torn between UNC and Duke right now. UNC is an easy pick. Duke is mercurial. And for some reason, Clemson like sort of has their number this year.
Yeah. That was scary down the stretch.
Little tight, and like we said, you know, Clemson wasn't making it off one win, but you know that also seemed to point out some of the dangers of you know the way the ACC handles this seeding process. And it's not just the ACC; a lot of leagues do it exactly the same way. The Big East did it similarly too. It's pretty dumb, just from a standpoint of, you know, rewarding teams that didn't necessarily do much. That goes for Clemson, Georgia Tech, which ended up falling into the first day matchups. Even if Boston College was able to pull an upset over Wake Forest. Things like that. Teams that handle their business, Miami, Syracuse, have to deal with a much tougher matchup in their first game in the ACC tournament and then head straight to the one line to face North Carolina. While, again, obviously some of these other teams, especially when you look at how the seeding shook out a little bit. Louisville, I know Hoya Sucks had talked about this on his post a couple days ago. Like, Louisville's kind of underseeded. Florida State and Notre Dame are probably overseeded.
Yeah.
So that's how you end up with the two best, arguably the two best teams in the league in one half of the bracket along with Duke. And then you have teams that others can definitely beat, Florida State, Notre Dame. That's how Virginia, I think, has like the second best odds to win it, or at least did at the beginning of the tournament, because just because of how the seeds worked out. And again, that's how you end up with a team like Wake that, you know, I mean, knock on wood, if Wake is able to do something tonight against Virginia Tech, maybe not.
Doesn't look like it.
Doesn't look like
84-75 with 2.5 minutes left.
If Wake were able to do something, you know, that they would be a direct beneficiary of how this tournament kind of shook out. I wrote an article for the Comeback today kind of talking about mid-majors and why they shouldn't participate in Championship Week because they're just hurting themselves.
Or at least not the way they do now.
No.
With the full array of teams.
Yeah, you're just hurting yourself when it comes to postseason chairs, all those other things. I think there's a case to be made. I know a lot of people have been talking about it this week on Twitter. Just a different way to run even the major conference tournaments that, especially like if you're going to have leagues that are 14, 15 teams deep, like then find a way to reward those top 8 to 10 teams in a way that you know, is different than what you're doing right now, which is just harming them.
You know what I actually was thinking about today, like right after the loss? I wondered if Syracuse would have been better off being the 9 and beating BC. Or, no, better off being like the 10 and getting the first game. I forgot the 9 didn't play. Would Syracuse have been better off with the same exact record? I don't know. It wouldn't have worked out in terms of the same way because Wake had what, one game fewer.
Wake was one below us.
I don't think they would have been better off being 9-9, but I wonder if, like, in a weird scenario, SU would have been better off playing on Tuesday against one of those teams and winning, and then still losing to Miami.
I think almost definitely.
Yeah, because then you get SU to what 19 wins. You get them, you know, you just say, oh, they beat Georgia Tech, they beat whomever it would have been, BC, Georgia Tech again. And unless it was Boston College, it probably would have been at least viewed as a decent win.
Although maybe, you know, if we just beat both college the first time around, like, should have.
Well, then we probably wouldn't have any of this discussion.
Yeah,
or if we beat UConn or Georgetown or one of the other Pitt the second time or one of the other 8,000 games we could have won.
Well, the BC game is glaring to me because of how easy it should be. On paper, if we win that game, we're 11-7. We end up with in a tie with Duke and Virginia.
We have tiebreakers over both of them.
Right.
So we would have been the 6.
We would have been. Would have been the five.
That would have been hilarious.
Right. We would have been the 5. We still would have had to face North Carolina, but not until around later.
We'd definitely be in. They would never leave out the number 5 team in the ACC.
Right.
You could talk about leaving out the number 8 because, you know, there's such a jumble from like 7 to 11, but. Yeah, I mean, they're like, you could have swung a lot of results, and pretty much, yeah, we find ourselves in, like, the one spot where we lost all the things we need to lose to end up exactly on this, like, precipice of making it or not, and it's not even, like, you know, it's easy to rank us in the bubble. Some people have us, like, in without the playing team. Some people have us, like, oh, they can't be in at all, so it's just, it's a whole mess. Who knows what the, and now we leave it up to the selection committee, so who even knows? Like, last year they gave us a gift. It didn't look like it at the time. I mean, it was nice to get in, but it didn't look like it because we had Michigan State staring us down and Dayton team
Tennessee.
That we were all stared of that we ended up smoking. But I don't expect that will have any – I don't think that indicates anything this year. Don't think there's going to be a pro or anti-Syracuse bias in terms of – I just don't know that – I don't trust them to – I don't know. I don't know that I would be able to do it if I was in that room. Like, I have no idea what to make of this team.
I would agree. I think this is a good time for, not halftime, it's going to be like more towards the back of the end of the podcast, but I want to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, Sports Passport. I've been talking about them for a few weeks now. I know, Dan, you going to any games this week? Or you done now that...
I would have gone, my work schedule didn't really work out. I would have probably been able to go on Friday if they had made it, and that was going to be it. Or if they had like seeded, if they had been like the 6th seed, then I would have probably gone to all of them.
Right.
So it's just like, the eight seed was not a good spot for me. But, you know, who knows? Maybe Friday if I'm bored, if there's, like, 2 tickets or something, I'll check it out. But
fair.
We'll see.
Yeah, I am. I will be at least a couple of the games going forward. I'll be at the championship almost certainly. I'm actually here, as some might know, with New York Life this week, helping them out on social. So I'll be on their Facebook Live, some other things, talking ACC basketball. Sadly, not about Syracuse. But, yeah, I'll be using Sports Passport. You can kind of be friends with folks, too, and follow along and see what games they're checking into. So if I find some cool photos, I'll be sure to share those on there. As a reminder, Sports Passport is a really cool way to be able to keep track of games you've gone to, the best players, the best moments, take photos. Obviously, you have a full logbook of which games you've been to the most, which venues you've been to the most, which teams have which records in games you've been to, which teams, you know, win more at home when you're there versus on the road. But I know I have someone like me, a little bit of a numbers junkie. It's fun to just kind of sort around the all the details they have in there. And you can also use the app now. You just search Sports Passport. It's on the App Store. And you can check in the games that way as well using your location services.
Very cool. And there are plenty of games there too around the country for the next couple of weeks.
There are indeed. Okay. Beer. Dan, what have you been drinking as I pull up your Untappd page in front of me?
Yeah, so I was just trying to figure out when the last time I was on, because you guys filled in for me last week. And that was an afternoon while I was in South Carolina. So since then, I've been all over the place. That weekend, I checked out River Rat Brewery in Columbia, which I had not heard of until I went there. Really cool space. Like, they had an outdoors. There were dogs everywhere. It was fun. I'd say the best two I had from there were their American Pulse Story and their Metal Man Pale Ale. I think everything was just, like, rock solid. Nothing, like, super, you know, that I'd jump out of my seat to go find again. But, you know, if you're down in that area, it was all pretty good. I've had the Goose Island Sophie, which is their Saison, which is, you know, really, really delicious. One of their better-known beers. I checked out Innerborough Spirits and Ales, which is in Brooklyn. I've had a couple things from them. I hadn't had them before. But I had their Mad Fat Fluid, which is an IPA, which was good. And then their Stay Gold IPA, which they brewed for the String of Run the Jewels concerts in town last week, which was delicious, really unfiltered and hazy and really good. I have one more of those sitting in my fridge. I don't know if they're ever going to brew it again, so I was happy to get my hands on that. Let's see what else I had. Susan from Hill Farmstead. Hill Farmstead, always great. And one of the better ones I had this week, Other Half here in Brooklyn, their Dreamin' Green I had the other day, an IPA, which is really delicious.
So you also had some Mash of Vanilla.
I did have Mash of Vanilla, yeah.
Their Mash series is great.
I'm not always the biggest barley wine fan, but it was definitely interesting. It's a pretty big beer. It's like, it's a lot. But
13 and a half or so?
Yeah.
Yeah, obviously I get a lot of the brewer stuff. Mash of Vanilla is one of my favorites. Mash and Grind is probably my favorite of the Mash series.
I mean, this is the only one I've had so far.
They don't get, like, a ton of distro. I know that.
John Brown Smokehouse up in Long Island City. That's the place I always see brewery stuff. If you find a little time and you want to go eat some barbecue.
Good to know. Yeah, I've had... Mash is okay. Again, like, I'm like you. I'm not, like, a huge... Aaron Goldfarb is, like, grinding his teeth right now and, like, getting pissed off. Because he's a huge barley wine fan. But I'm not a major barley wine fan. But the brewery's barley wines are usually pretty excellent. Mash Vanilla is probably one of my favorites. Mash and Grind is my favorite. I've also had Mash and French Toast this year, which was very interesting.
That's on.
It didn't get as much of the maple as they were looking for, or the cinnamon. And I actually drank that one pretty close to, like, bottling. Mash and Coconut's pretty excellent as well. So.
Yeah, I always feel like with something like that, I would almost go, like, I'd rather miss it a little bit than know too much. Because right. Then you have, like, a kind of a gross, undrinkable beer. If you know too little, you're like, all right, well, I see what they were trying to go for here. Maybe they could be a little less cautious with it.
Buy that. On my end, I really didn't drink a ton last weekend.
This is, I mean, I...
You were riding a hot streak, Dan.
This has to be the all-time.
Yeah, this is... We're going, like, a few straight weeks of Dan just running laps around me.
I've been to a bunch of breweries, and I was traveling, so I have an excuse, but...
Well, now we're going to drink the same stuff tonight, so we're not going to... There's not going to be any one-upping going on, but... Let's see. I swung over to Ballast Point, Long Beach for the first time in a while. Had the Lone Shark series with Simcoe. It was a sour. It wasn't too bad. They had Anything Goza After Midnight. It was a dark Goza, which was a weird concept. Definitely didn't know how it was Goza because it didn't really have any of the characteristics.
The, like, salty, sour.
Yeah, like, it wasn't salty. It wasn't really that sour. It wasn't really that light. So I'm like, so this is more of a just straight... Wild Ale, that you're just trying to pass off something else anyway.
It's like the name. Like, ooh, dark goes it.
Yeah, perfect. It's like, this has to taste like fruit because of the Ballast Point. That's how they work now. Also had, speaking of fruit, Tangerine Express IPA from Stone. Was not bad at all. I was pleasantly surprised. And then, I don't know, had, like, some Golden Road line in the fridge. So I had a Ride On IPA. And that was really good. And I definitely drank more before than than I drank in this past week, which is fine. I'm saving up and giving my liver a break for the trip to New York.
Burgeoning Brooklyn beer scene here.
Indeed, indeed.
There are so many good breweries here.
We are headed to Three's Brewing shortly with a host of New Magician past and current contributors. You know, Sean Farrell might be there.
Okay. You got a whole crew.
Yeah, Andy Pregler will be there. Goldfarb will not be joining us, but I'll see him later in the week. So yeah. Dan, anything else before we depart? I know, again, shorter podcast, but I think one that, because we actually have, you know, visual cues now, it becomes much easier, at least this episode, Dan and I to be able to quickly convey topics and know which direction we're both headed.
I don't even know. I've just been like racking my brain over this tournament thing. This is like, it's kind of baffling that Syracuse ends up being one of the craziest like bubble teams. And granted, maybe that's because I don't really care that much if you know Cal makes it in whatever year. But it seems like the first bubble team and the most talked about bubble team for every single segment that's been done in the last 2 days has been Syracuse. And once again, it is we did the thing that assures that we are as bubbly as possible. So congrats to us. It is the most Syracuse thing that could have happened.
Congrats to us indeed. Before we go, one more thing. I just want to give a shout out to Jim Boeheim for being Jim Boeheim.
Oh, he was so Jim Boeheim tonight.
Just you catch Jim after a loss and some fun things will happen. And Jim was throwing bows at Greensboro, and this was right up there, the Danny controversy. City of Greensboro tweeted, like, talking some shit.
I will say that it was a good tweet. It was factual. We had not won an ACC tournament game yet. I went to Greensboro last time, or no, two times, the time we played there, because we were suspended for the second time. Greensboro is not good. The Coliseum is average. And unless you're a Duke, NC State, Wake Forest, or UNC fan, I don't see why you'd rather be there than... I mean, this isn't even a New York thing. But no, like he said, put it in Atlanta, put it in D.C., put it in Boston, put it in Philly if you want. Put it in Charlotte. Charlotte's an awesome town, and it's right there.
It'll be in Charlotte soon.
Yeah, and it's going to be in Charlotte. Greensboro, there literally is nothing there. There's, like, one restaurant next to the place, and there's, like, a couple bars a couple streets away, and it's not all that easy to get to compared to all these other places. It's not any kind of media hub. So, like, I appreciate history, but, like, there's a difference between, like, and I hate sounding like an old, like, the Big East person because I'm so not that. There's a difference between your history is at MSG and your history is in Greensboro.
And there's also plenty, like, I think, who was it in the comments section that, like, broke down the numbers? Like, Greensboro really hasn't hosted it that many more times than Charlotte.
Yeah.
It's only been, like, maybe 5-6 more times. It's not even that much. And, like, yeah, this is, hosting in Greensboro is like hosting the ACC tournament in Clemson. Like, there's no value to it other than the fact that you want to say you had it at a smaller, more quote-unquote intimate venue. Maybe Barclays doesn't fit the bill there and doesn't fit the bill as much as MSG does, but if the ACC can ever get itself into MSG, I will guarantee a lot of people will change their tune no matter what Syracuse does in that building.
Yeah, and even Barclays, like, I've been there a million times. Barclays is a much nicer arena than Greensboro Coliseum. Like, who's out there standing for the historical Greensboro Coliseum? Probably some NC State
fans. A lot of people, apparently.
Yeah, but they're all from the same four schools. Like, come on, this is a new league. I know NC runs the thing, but, like, let's be realistic here. Like, there are Duke and UNC fans everywhere. They're going to come up to New York. They'll go down to Miami. There are a lot of cities in the landscape here that are good for this. Greensboro is, what, the 25th best city to host this in ACC country? Like, come on.
At best.
So, Jim Boeheim, yes, Jim Boeheim's a dick. We all know Jim Boeheim's a dick. We're all fans of that, to be frank here.
We'd hate him for it if he was coaching.
Oh, 100%. But he is a factual dick in this regard. This is 100% a true statement.
I would concur. I think that's a good place to end us on. This is a shorter one than normal, but bear with us. We're going to have some cool stuff going on for the rest of the week. I'll be hanging out with some mascots in the next couple days, get some behind-the-scenes content around the ACC tournament. Just because Syracuse is out doesn't mean that I'm not going to have some interesting things to share and see and do. So, yeah. Keep tuning in to the Noon's Twitter feed, Facebook, obviously on the blog. And Dan, thanks for trekking over to Brooklyn. Should be a fun night. Go Orange. Please don't get left out of the tournament on Sunday.
Yes, please don't do that.